welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 388 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal Sean Orford. How are you, Sean? You all right?
I am stunning and amazing. And incredible.
How's life
apart
over
from that,
in,
I'm all right as well.
Yeah. How's life over on your side of the world? Everyone keeping well?
Yeah. Family's all good. We without sounding like a broken record, we have the ongoing long COVID stuff that is still happening, but it is getting easier. It's like I'm loads less fatigued week on week, which is good. Yeah.
Getting a bit of your spring back in your step, eh?
Yeah. I'll be running and skipping the light fantastic any moment now.
Good to hear it. All right, cool. We're talking about the joy of pets today. We'll come on to that in a sec. See what triggered that interest for you. Or you've got a little story about a Labrador, I think. And I've got a story about a horse, which is quite funny as well from last week too. So we'll come on to that in a sec. Liveinthepresent.co.uk, all the show notes and links as ever for any new listeners. Check it out. Sean's written a blog post to accompany this article, which is over on the website. Sean, how are you doing? And apart from your long COVID stuff and your everyone, how's planet Earth from a psychotherapist's perspective?
Really, really interesting stuff going on. And I'm not getting into the new stuff, but it's like if you observe Donald Trump at the moment, it is a wonderful gift to psychology trainers and things in the way that he does stuff. If you observe him, his behavior at the moment is similar to being toddlerish, as in stamping his feet and having a paddy. And we're often told with emotional psychology that people will regress back when they're under pressure. They'll regress back to the last time that they could show emotion freely, before it was kind of, they were told they couldn't do it. And when I look at him, we're looking at probably 3 years old, 3 years, 4 years old, that kind of stuff, stamping, toddlerish, having a tantrum. And that behavior is very early childish. And I wonder what kind of childhood he had, if that was the last time that he could freely express himself emotionally. Because that's his reference point that he keeps going back to.
Yeah. The big news this week on planet Earth is, well, Biden's been announced as president, or the president-elect. And, you know, like you say, Team Trump is kicking off a bit of a fuss. And it'll be interesting to see you the next month or month and a half where that takes him and everyone else and his team. And I can't see him going quietly into the night and all that stuff with any kind of grace. But I guess, you know, looking on the flip side, there are a lot of people in America that will be very unhappy right now. And maybe in the UK as well. You know, he's got a reasonable amount of support and sympathy over here too. So, Biden seems like the kind of guy who will at least make an effort to bridge the gap and the divide. But whether people are ready, it might be too soon for healing just yet. What would you say?
Yeah. And it's a bit like the whole COVID thing. It won't be until, you know, towards the end of next year before things start to make sense for them, both from a COVID and from an election point of view. Interesting.
It's all go, but you know, putting all that aside, we're talking about animals today and pets and the kind of the joy of pets. What prompted this one, Sean? Because this came from you again.
It was very much seeing people online, and the amount of times I'm seeing people online and they're cuddling a pet. Usually it's a cat or a dog. The cat might be interacting and climbing over their heads and their backs and walking in front of the screen and all that kind of stuff. The dogs are usually much more kind of sat beside them or leaning on them, maybe even asleep on them. But it made me realise the issue about how important animals are to us, as we call them pets. and the idea that we keep animals for company, and to give us a sense of kind of purpose and belonging and stuff like that. And yeah. they play a very powerful role in who we are and what we do, I think.
Yeah, there's an article I'm going to link to, slate.com, which kind of tries to dig into the history of pets and when we started to keep animals, you know, as not just in terms of putting them to work, you know, helping plow the fields and all that stuff and lug stuff around for us, but, you know, to keep them for fun, really, and kind of companionship. And yeah, the dog seems to be the initial animal that we kind of brought in. Some studies saying that it can go back over 30,000 years.
Yeah.
When that bond began between man, woman, and his or her dog. And it's something that I've experienced because, yeah, when I was growing up, I have a pretty typical childhood. So we started with a couple of hamsters here and there and some goldfish every now and again. And then when I was 11, maybe going on 12 years old, we got a little Jack Russell called Sweep, who lived with us for 18 years, you know, on planet Earth. And, you know, he was a huge part of our family for that period. And, yeah, we still got photos of him up in our house here and, you know, reminded of pictures of him, speak about him quite a bit when we're together as a family. And my lads, actually, we haven't got a dog yet. The lads are dead keen to get one, obviously. But Jacob's like, he sees photos of Sweep and he's obsessed with this little dog that he never got to meet. So they are a massive part of our families and our lives, aren't they, when we have them?
I guess in your situation, because you back onto the wood, it's an ideal place to have a dog, isn't it?
Yeah. Don't tell my lads that, but yeah, it would. No, I mean, I absolutely loved having a dog to bits. You know, he was one of my best buddies for years. I guess as a family now, we kind of, as responsible adults, we're kind of putting it off a little bit because we know that dogs come with, you know, it's a big responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah.
An animal of any kind, but a dog especially. They take a lot of time, and, you know, rightly so, and you've got to have that time available for them. What's your animal history, Sean?
Oh, a Labrador as a kid. but then I've had loads of dogs and cats throughout life. When I had the small holding, apart from the animals on the small holding, I had three dogs, two cats, and a big rabbit, big Belgian rabbit, black rabbit, that they all lived together in the house. And I have a lovely picture somewhere of all of them sat in a pile, lying in a pile, asleep in front of the fire. All of them just lying on top of each other, having a sleep, which is amazing.
You mentioned there you had a dog, a Labrador, when you were a kid. So was that one you were living with your family still and your dad?
Yeah. Eventually, it was more as I was going, this dog arrived called Arthur. He was a big lab.
So I'm interested there, knowing your history with your dad, and you two didn't get on very well, and that was what caused you to leave home. What was your dad's relationship like with the dog? Was that like his escape for like showing affection and like connecting with planet Earth? Or
I think it could have been.
Was he not interested?
Quite interestingly, my mother told me years later that when my father, because he did some night work, when he was out of work, the dog would come in the bedroom and be with her. And she said one day, She woke up in the night and the dog had got in and was under the covers on my father's side of the bed, asleep with his head on the pillow, like he'd just taken over my father's place in there. So that they must have had a close kind of bond between them, I guess.
Yeah. So yeah. Sometimes you do see people that might be stiff upper lip and not show much emotion, but you give them a dog or their dog comes to them and they kind of erupt into emotion and just overcome with joy. So animals can have that effect on people, can't they?
Yeah. And one of the things I see a lot is older people, very often a woman on her own, will have a little lap dog who is her companion. You know, I do see fellas walking around with dogs as they go up and down the street here, looking out my office window here. And a lot of those are quite little dogs as well.
Animals, you can tell when you look into their eyes, there's more going on than meets meets the eye, so to speak. Like you had in your blog post, you told a little story about a Labrador you met last week or quite recently.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I took some bread around to somebody, and like I made some bread, so I took a loaf around, and they had a Labrador, Poppy, who wanted my attention and was doing this with me. And I gradually kind of got in with her and had a cuddle. And her eyes were locked on mine. It was really weird. And I was giving her a stroke and she kind of moved my hand down. And her owner said to me, "That's really weird. So why is that weird?" And she said, "Well, number one, she doesn't like men." I don't know what that says about me, but she said she didn't like men. The second one was she never holds eye contact with anybody and she was locked onto me. And the third one was that my hand was over her cancer in her abdomen. Mm. And she was, she obviously has cancer and will be going at some point. But she was locked onto me. And it was like, it was as though, and this was a bit fascinating to me, it was as though she decided that I had something that she needed, whether it was the energy or a cuddle or whatever it was. And it was like she looked at me and said, "I'll have some of that." Yeah, and it made me think about how dogs and cats particularly don't go through any thinking process. They just feel. Mm. They just connect, yeah? And you would have had your experience with your dog as a child, but dogs kind of know you. They know without knowing. There's no kind of logical thinking process that goes on in that relationship. You're just there in that relationship. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like a deep intuitive thing that animals have that we've lost touch with in many ways.
Mm. Yeah. I've got a couple of guinea pigs away by my computer. Actually, I might introduce one to the camera in a minute or two. But even these two little guinea pigs, you know, well, they're quite big now, actually. But it's amazing how much you can communicate with them through looking at them and through the sounds they make and what have you. And you know, there's a reasonable amount of intelligence going on there as well. So I love them to bits. They have this kind of habit of letting me know when the water's run out, because you know I'll fill it up every few days, but sometimes it might go a little bit long and it's empty, and they kind of they need to let me know, and they only have a certain number of ways. So they've started flipping. There's a little dish we put underneath it, the water thing, to kind of catch the drips so it doesn't leak and the little hutch doesn't smell too much. But they've started flipping that over when it's run out. So like when I feed up their food every day, if that little, the smaller dish is halfway across the hutch, I'll know that.
Okay, I wonder whether in a guinea pig's mind, it's, we need to train this human to fill the water bowl. So we'll train him by flipping the lid so that when he sees that the bowl's gone, then he'll know that we need more water. So they're actually training you.
Yeah, and I'm sure they are. I'm in their little heads. So that's probably what's going on. And I'm the stupid, cute, adorable, big human that kind of scuttles around. hilarious. But yeah, they do become part of our families, animals, don't they? And but animals do play other roles in society as well. I mean, you had animals on a farm. Were you kind of breeding them for food or for dairy, for producing milk or all sorts?
No, well, it was the whole thing. I'd come back and been vegetarian for 7 years and found myself eating a Mother's Pride bacon sandwich, thinking, this is weird. What am I doing eating this? I've eaten meat for years. And I thought about it, and I thought I never really faced up to and investigated the issues of eating meat. So I was in a position to do it. I got a small holding in Wales. It was derelict, so I moved in, rebuilt the house, and then stocked it with animals. And then there came the day, the famous day, when there was me and a chicken, and one of us had to end up in the freezer, you know, and we went from there. And I did it for 4 years. And the last day I did it, I killed 60 animals in a day. You have to kill your stock at the end of the season. You only take your breeding stock through the winter. And I just had that massive realization, what on earth am I doing this for? You know, and that whole sense about animals don't have to die in order for me to live. Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
So I I went back to being more kind of veggie moving, vegan, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of talk now, isn't there, about vegetarianism, veganism. Just this morning before we came on, before I knew what we were talking about, actually, I saw a news story to say McDonald's have just announced that starting next year, they're going to have a much wider, bigger meat-free range. They're going to call it the McPlant range. So they've got substitute meats, you know, so that there's a real big movement. So, you know, whether you like McDonald's or not and the way they do things, when a massive business like that starts to move on something like this, you know that something is happening in the world, isn't it? Because the amount of food they order and they must have to procure from who knows where is so massive that to make a decision like that, it's massive, and they must see a huge market for it as well. So for better or worse, McDonald's are going vegan by the sounds of it, slowly but surely. Yeah. So the impact on animal welfare must be quite huge.
One of the things I'm not sure about with all the vegan stuff that's going on, and it's the difference between being plant-based and eating plants as opposed to eating processed vegan food, because I'm not convinced that a lot of the food is completely healthy, in the sense that they're using lots of chemicals and oils and stuff to take the place of the animal products that would have been in those kinds of foods before. Mm. And I think that's something that we need to be very aware of, that because we are going vegan, it doesn't necessarily mean we're going healthy.
Yeah, totally. I mean, as a family, we've cut down a lot on certain kinds of meats, and meat in general, actually, we're relatively good, but we've got a lot of work to do. But yeah, I mean, I look at things from a carbon point of view, and like beef and lamb, two of the best tasting ones are like a real no-go. If you're trying to live a carbon-free or carbon, you know, carbon zero lifestyle, those two in particular are just off the menu, so to speak. But they should be anyway, shouldn't they? When you think about our connection with animals and how much joy they can bring, the idea of slaughtering something or raising it just for the purpose of slaughtering it and eating it doesn't sit well, does it? And yet still, I'm not sure what's on the menu tonight for dinner, but it's probably something with chicken for me. So why do we keep doing these things when we know it ain't right?
But we don't necessarily know it ain't right, do we? One of the things, one of the beliefs for lots of religious people is that man was made in God's image and all these animals were provided for man's benefit. You know, that and the idea that animals are of a lower class, so we are the masters.
Yeah. I was just watching I was force-fed an advert on YouTube earlier on. And it was a food advert. I can't remember exactly who it was for, but I think it was like a local high street type Google advert. Anyway, one of the shops they featured on was a fishmonger's, by the looks of it. And it was, you know, it was acted out, but someone in the fishmonger's at the back threw this fish out into the air, and in slow motion, it went through the air. And then the lady that was on the front of house in the fishmonger's, chopped it up really fast, like with knives, and then it kind of landed in bits in front of her. And even I was thinking, that's a bit weird, you know, how we can just so casually depict the mindless slaughter of a creature like that. And I eat fish, you know, every now and again, but it's like, it's so habitually and like normalized. We don't, most people don't even think about it until we kind of...
There is a thing in Japan, there's a dish where you have a live fish, because they eat raw fish, they have a live fish. And the idea is that the chef in front of you can gut and dissect this fish so quickly that the skeleton and the tail is still flapping by the time you're eating the food. Yeah. I mean. which is a bit,
I know. I know I talk about Japan quite a bit, or I'm quite obsessed with the culture, but their relationship with seafood and like whaling, the whaling industry, ain't too hot from my perspective anyway, or from a Western perspective. It's a little bit weird, but I guess if you look at hard enough, and I know in France they eat a lot more horse, don't they, on the continent, whereas over here it's like, wouldn't you know, we don't need horse. What the heck, they're for riding.
This is the bit that I don't get. It's like somebody who is a meat eater and is happy to eat cows and sheep and lambs and everything else can be absolutely outraged at someone eating deer, you know, like little bambis, or eating anything that isn't on their menu. And one of the classics is there are many countries in the world that happily eat dogs and cats. Now, to us, that is absolutely outrageous. You know, like, how dare you do that kind of thing? You know, but we make that separation between us being able to eat a baby lamb, but someone else being able to eat a baby dog is seen as wrong. It's really kind of hypocritical. It's weird, isn't it?
Well, it's very weird, but surely, haven't you got an explanation for it, Sean, with your psychotherapist head?
To me, it's that kind of bias of us and them. You know, we're right and you're wrong. So if we're all vegan and you're meat eaters, well, you're all mad and we're all good. You know, if we're all vegetarian and you're vegan, then we're good and you're mad. You know, it's like, how are you going to split it up? And it is an us and them issue. And I can remember the outrage in this country where they found horse meat in the mincemeat that people were using that would normally be ground up cows, but yep. They suddenly found they had ground up. And people were absolutely incandescent with rage that they'd been eating horses. Yep. You know, I mean, if you're going to eat dead bodies, what's the difference between eating a horse and eating a cow? You know, don't get it. When I can remember being in France and having the option, if you're going to ask for a steak, you could have a beef steak, which would either be a male steak or a female steak, female steaks being much more tender than male steaks, which are bullocks, or you could have a whole steak. And if you didn't request anything, you got a whole steak anyway, naturally.
Right. Yeah? Okay.
But like, what's wrong with that? You know, if you're going to do it, why do we make this kind of distinction?
Strange, isn't it? I mean, talking more about dogs and pets, then I'm kind of, what part of my worry about getting a dog is that we get a bad egg of a dog, and it kind of doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't agree with who we are, and you know, we can't tame it and keep it under control, that kind of thing. Do you think getting a dog is the same as having a child, in that you can, the dog will kind of, do you get just idiot dogs that can't be tamed and like trained, or do dogs kind of shape themselves around their surroundings?
Well, if you think about dogs as people, because I always think of them as people, they just got four legs and a fur coat. Yeah. When you start to look at it, in the same way that you're going to get various kinds of mental health in human beings, you get various kinds of mental health in animals. You'll get one chimpanzee who's off his cake and will be doing all kinds of crazy things, and and another chimpanzee who's out there trying to help people and look after stuff that's going on in the group. It's the same, it's no different. And you'll find with guinea pigs, you'll have one guinea pig who's really kind of placid and trying to sort stuff out, and one guinea pig who's always fighting to get into the food first and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah? Well, I'm going to grab one now, but yeah.
Yeah, go on. Let's
while let's I'm, have while I'm going to get one, do you think that? So you think that animals can be trained to an extent to kind of be what you want them to be?
Nature and nurture. Yeah, the younger you get an animal, the better. But when you're looking at getting a dog, it's better to go and know the parents of the dog, so that you can. If you go and